Welcome to the Core Principles Podcast. Thank you for tuning in, and we hope you'll enjoy this lively discussion of relevant topics, which we attempt to examine through the lens of unchanging, objective truth. Here is the host of the Core Principles Podcast, Clay Howerton.
Thank you, Suzanne. Today on Core Principles, I'm honored to welcome Congressman Jody Heiss. He's Senior Vice President of the Family Research Council. He is President of FRC Action. He was pastor of Bethlehem First Baptist Church in Georgia and later pastor of the Summit Church. He represented Georgia's 10th Congressional District in the United States Congress. He was founding member of the House Freedom Caucus. He's also a radio show host, podcast host, and author of a great new book that we will discuss today called Sacred Trust, Election Integrity, and the Will of the People. Welcome, Congressman Heiss. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Clay. It's an honor to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you. And I want to start with a bit about your background. I learned from your book, Sacred Trust, that you and I have some common organizational ties. One of those is Asbury University here in Kentucky. I've asked the Asbury president, Dr. Kevin Brown, to come on this program and talk about not only his university, but also the spectacular event that happened last year that drew people to worship for more than a week. I wanted to ask you, how was your time studying at Asbury?
Oh, I loved Asbury. Incredible school in every way, academically, spiritually, disciplined. It was an incredible experience. I met my wife there, and we've been married now a little over 40 years, but I absolutely have nothing but the best thoughts and memories and wishes for Asbury.
And another organizational connection we have is the Alliance Defending Freedom, ADF. The foundation that I work for supports ADF, and in fact, this week I'm going to be in an online forum hosted by their CEO, Kristen Wagner. They do great work, and you know that better than most. Please share with our listeners how the Alliance Defending Freedom helped you in one of the important activities you were involved with.
Yeah, I love ADF. We go way back about 20 plus years, but the particular issue that you're talking about, I had been in a previous battle involving the ACLU when they came after our county over the Ten Commandments, and that whole issue took on national focus, kind of pushed me out of the pulpit and into a broader arena. And out of that experience, I was introduced to ADF, and they actually asked me if I would be willing to challenge the IRS, specifically the Johnson Amendment, which limits what can and cannot be said from the pulpits of America, with fear that you could potentially lose your tax-exempt status there at the church if you cross some nebulous political line. And so I was eager to do so for a host of reasons, which some of which I get into in the book. But the bottom line, I ended up being one of 33 pastors who challenged the Johnson Amendment. And to do so, I and the other 32, we endorsed a candidate from our various pulpits. I know our church on that particular Sunday, we were covered up. We had every media you can think of. Even Nancy Pelosi's daughter was there doing a documentary for HBO, but everybody was there. I endorsed a candidate. I urged our people to vote for one, not to vote for the other. And clicks and flashes went off like crazy, and I'd wondered what in the world I had stepped into. Clay, but I can tell you it was a life-transforming experience. The next day, I sent a copy of that message to the IRS along with a letter, and the letter basically just said, I don't believe I have violated the law. I believe I've stood on my First Amendment rights, and I believe your IRS code is unconstitutional. I challenge you to come after me. Now, the other 32 pastors did something similar. ADF was our legal backdrop. They were defending us. And the bottom line, Clay, the IRS did nothing. They kind of made a little bit of noise, but they did nothing. And so we got together and said, let's do it again. So we did it a second time. And that time there were about 160-something churches across the country involved, and still no reaction from the IRS. So that ended up becoming a movement called Pulpit Freedom Sunday that took place annually. Thousands of churches took place. And to this day, the IRS is still not come after any of us with that, because they know the First Amendment applies and religious liberty applies, period. But the epicenter of it is in the pulpit, and government cannot come in to a church and tell you what you can and cannot deal with, particularly as it's relating to biblical issues from the pulpit. So they never came after us. They knew they would lose that case. And so it's easier for them to use the bully pulpit of intimidation to try to force us to self-censor our own selves, thinking somehow we're doing something illegal, than it is for them to actually come after us. So that was my introduction to ADF, and I absolutely love that organization.
It is a fascinating chapter in the book. So listeners, become readers. The book is called Sacred Trust by Jody Heiss. It's as you're going to find in the rest of this brief interview, it is an amazing book with a lot of important information. The stand that you took reminds me just a little bit of this famous writer in Britain named J.K. Rowling. She wrote the Harry Potter stuff. They made some rule that says we're going to lock you up if you say men are men and women are women. And she says, come get me. I beg you. Well, anyway, in your book, Sacred Trust, you also share some of the things that motivated you to run for elected office. Now, some of our listeners might find it odd that a pastor would run for office. That used to be a lot more common. What motivated you? I know this chapter that you talked about with religious liberty was one of the things. What else motivated you to offer to represent Georgia in the Congress?
Yeah, you know, it was that battle with the ACLU and the battle with the IRS, with the Alliance Defending Freedom that we just mentioned. Both those battles kind of pushed me out of the pulpit and put me into a very much public arena that I'd never prepared for, never dreamed of, never wanted. But those battles came our way, and we took a stand and just kind of got pushed into a public arena. And so I found myself speaking everything from Washington, D.C., all across Georgia. I was elected first vice president of the Georgia Baptist Convention during that time. A radio station contacted me asking if I would give updates as to what was happening with these cases. That turned into a daily program, which ended up we were on some 400 stations every day nationally as a result of that. So I just kind of got pushed into an arena, Clay, that I had never dreamed of and frankly didn't seek. But then our representative resigned, stepped down, and we started having people call and say, ask, would you please consider running for office? And my wife and I sincerely prayed earnestly about all this. And we felt very much that that was what God was leading us, because we were at this point doing everything we could to get the body of Christ to take a stand, to engage our culture. And that was the emphasis of the radio program that was heard daily. And this seemed like our whole ministry at this time was going towards encouraging believers to be salt and light and to take a stand and to engage this thing with the understanding that God created three institutions, the family, the church, and government. Government is not a man-made thing. It is a God-made thing. And yet most believers seem to not have a problem understanding their role in family, nor do they have a problem understanding their role within the church, the body of Christ. But many of them struggle with this whole concept of what is my place in government. And salt and light requires us to be engaged. And the fact that this is a God-created institution calls us to be engaged. And on top of that, we live in a country, our entire political system of which does not work without involvement of the people. And so we have both a biblical mandate and a civic duty as Americans to be engaged in our culture. And if Christians are not going to engage that, then we are unfortunately going to end up with very much the type of issues that we're facing right now in our country.
Yes. And when you got to D.C., you learned the hard way by some sort of betrayal by Speaker Boehner's folks that the swamp is called the swamp for good reason. But it turns out, I think one of the issues that you had to face early on and that you continue to be a champion for is election integrity. And you highlight in your book, Sacred Trust, why that is so vital. So I want to dive into election integrity for the remainder of our discussion. And in 2020, we know that the presidential election was at least unusual. Six counties, including Fulton County in Georgia, stopped counting votes and kicked out the required observers and said, we're not going to count anymore while you're gone. But while they were gone, they changed the vote totals so much in every one of those six counties that it changed the result of every one of those six states. And we citizens were eyewitnesses to this, but we're still told every day there's no evidence that anything happened in 2020. We saw it happen. That's just one of many things that happened, but it was evident to us. So I want to ask you, Congressman Jody Heiss, you agreed to challenge the electors from Georgia when they were going to be certified on the 6th of January, 2021. And Senator Kelly Loeffler was going to affirm your challenge, which would have started a process that would allow evidence to be heard in Congress about irregularities in the election. That didn't happen. Could you walk us through that, sir?
Yeah, I mean, the events that took place in Washington, D.C. and the Capitol on that January 6th seemed to change everything for Senator Loeffler. It certainly did not change anything to me. In fact, I was scarcely aware that anything was taking place. My focus was on challenging the electoral vote from Georgia. And frankly, I was not even aware until late that there was a mob gathering outside the Capitol and so forth. And so, as we all know, looking back, and for me, being a part of that day there, we were suspended in the activities, the actions of Congress on that particular day for several hours. And when we came back that evening to reinstate our business and start work again, Senator Loeffler evidently felt as though she didn't want to object. And so when Vice President Pence was going through the state by state by state, he came to Georgia and I got up and, of course, objected. And the process is a member of the House has to object, and then there needs to be a second from a senator who agrees to the objection. And if there is a senator to agree with the objection, then there's a couple of hours of debate to present your case as to why you believe there should be a challenge to the electoral votes and so forth. And that's what I was prepared to do. But Senator Loeffler at that point decided, because of the events of the day, she didn't want to proceed it. And so the whole thing fell apart for Georgia right there at that moment.
And fell apart, unfortunately, for all of us who wanted some integrity in that election, I believe. And so that whole day, I've looked at that on this program. I did an episode about January 6th in which, at least to my own satisfaction, I proved that it was not as the media primarily reported it. I named names of Antifa agitators who pretended to be Trump supporters and were causing trouble for the camera's sake. I know that the January 6th commission knowingly suppressed evidence that implicated certain groups and even a federal agency that I will not name, and they suppressed evidence that exonerated Trump supporters. Fox News even fired their top-rated host for sharing some of that evidence. It's been an untouchable lie that they can't allow citizens to see through. So I want to ask you, how would you counsel those of us citizens who are concerned that what we see as powerful forces seem to be pushing this dangerous lie that is causing harm to Americans?
Yeah, listen, this is partly why elections are so important. They have consequences. And if we ever lose the integrity of the ballot box, then we are in serious, serious trouble in this country. That is one area that simply cannot be compromised. We cannot compromise fair elections so that the voice of the people is accurately heard and thereby the will of the people is able to be done both through their who is going to represent them and the policies that will come forth from that. So when you're talking about getting involved in this type of thing, you know, the good news, I think, Clay, that we're seeing right now is there's probably more people who are more informed now because of programs like yours, social media outlets. There's so many different places to gather news and information from, and people are doing that. And as a result, they're getting more educated. They're finding out what's going on. Now, obviously, you can't trust all the news outlets out there and everybody who's out there on social media. You have to be very careful with that. But the information is out there, and so gathering information and then being quick to hold our representatives accountable to it, those types of things, as a former member of Congress, I can tell you, it means a lot. when we hear from our constituents. Now, it didn't mean much when I heard from other people in different places across the country. And, you know, they call all the time our office just like they would any other office. That was totally secondary. But when constituents and even Georgians contacted our office, we always put them as a priority and we listened to the voices of what people were saying. So don't think that your voice does not matter. It absolutely matters. It matters a great deal, both in letters, emails, phone calls, whatever method you can, showing up at town hall meetings, all of it matters. And this is the time that we need to engage those opportunities that we have, not the least of which is the actual ballot booth itself. We need to be present and just overwhelm any attempts at shenanigans to where they can't do it. And there are more eyes on the ground, more boots on the ground, more laws that have been put in place in this upcoming election to give more of us security, confidence that we're going to have secure elections. So this is a time we cannot wave a white flag. We've got to very much be present in every way that we possibly can.
Amen. And you detail in your book, Sacred Trust, some of the reasons that election integrity is so vital. You hinted at them here. Listeners, become readers of this book. You will learn a lot of important information. But one of those reasons obviously has to do with our citizens' trust in the ability to participate. And you just mentioned some of the ways we can participate. Primary is by voting people out if they're not doing the right thing. So I want to share a quote from Benjamin Franklin from the Constitutional Convention, and then ask you, Congressman Heiss, a very difficult question. It's a question that you've already addressed in your book, but I know you're gonna nail it. But for the audience's sake, they need to hear what you have to say about this difficult question. It is primary as we wrap up today's discussion. So here's a brief quote from Benjamin Franklin before the Constitutional Convention. He said, quote, "We have been assured, sir, in the sacred writings, that except the Lord build the house, they labor in vain that build it. I firmly believe this, and I also believe that without his concurring aid, we shall succeed in this political building no better than the builders of Babel. We shall be divided by our little, partial, local interests. Our projects will be confounded, and we ourselves will become a reproach and a byword to future ages. And what is worse, mankind may hereafter, from this unfortunate instance, despair of establishing governments by human wisdom and leave it to chance, war, and conquest," unquote. Now, I contend that Dr. Franklin's wise words, which, by the way, were followed up by a request to pray that God would help them in their deliberations, his wise words also apply not only to building a new government, but also to sustaining our experiment in self-governance by ensuring that the will of the people, as expressed through their votes, is upheld with integrity. And so if we citizens become convinced that we don't have a voice and it's not counted properly, we may also, unfortunately, seek other means, even war. So now here comes the hard question, Congressman Jody Heiss. How do we restore trust in election integrity and thus avoid calamity?
Well, as what I've already been alluding to, look, there is, let's paint the picture of elections as a whole. The point of elections is not who wins or who loses an election. That is really not the issue. Now, I may be very disappointed if my candidate loses, but the issue of an election is not who wins, who loses. The issue is, was that an election that accurately portrayed the will of the people? Was the people's voice heard? Was the people's voice recorded? And was the people's will done? And now, if my candidate loses and I'm disappointed, if it was a fair election, I can come back 2 years from now or whatever it may be, and I can try to convince people to think otherwise, and we still have a chance. But if the election somehow is compromised so that the will of the people was negated, then what do? We have lost a country of the consent of the governed. We have lost a country where we, the people, have the voice in self-determining the type of government under which we are going to live and that we're going to pass down to our children and grandchildren. So it is within that context that we must understand that this whole issue of voting is indeed a sacred trust, both from the perspective of the voter, that we have a civic duty to engage this and to be involved with it, but also from the perspective of our government, that they have a duty to protect it, to defend it, to make sure that it is about nothing more, nothing less than the will of the people being heard and fulfilled. And so when we start hearing all these examples, some of which you brought up here, everything from ballot harvesting to horribly kept up voter rolls to lack of signature verification to no voter photo ID required, on and on and on and on, drop-off boxes, mail-in ballots, all this stuff, wherein there are a host of question marks that are brought forth that highlight the potential problems that have been or could be involved in our political process known as elections, then we have the duty to do everything we can to fix those problems, to close the gaps, to plug the holes, and to ensure unquestionably that the will of the people is sacred. When they go to vote, their vote is going to count. One legal vote cast, one legal ballot counted, and the will of the people heard. That's what elections are all about, and that is what drove me to write this book. And the title itself, I believe deeply, this whole concept of the will of the people, the consent of the governed, the ballot box is indeed a sacred trust that we as Americans must do everything within our power to protect.
Well, thank you so much. And I do want to encourage again, listeners, buy and read and study this book, Sacred Trust, by Congressman Jody Heiss. And if I may ask one final question, are you optimistic that we will, in fact, gain some more of the nationwide, not just in a few states, gain some more of these measures like cleaning up voter rolls and having voter ID and serialized paper ballots and so forth? Do you believe that we will successfully restore trust in election integrity?
I do, Clay, and we've already seen it in dozens and dozens of states who have passed some really strong measures to protect elections. And that all comes back to what we were talking about earlier with people gathering information, learning what's going on, and applying pressure, so to speak, to their representatives to do something to protect our elections. And as a result, state after state after state have taken significant measures to do that. And I believe that we are just at the beginning of that process. And yes, I'm optimistic that we're going to continue seeing state after state do what they can to protect the integrity of the ballot box. And that all goes back again to the strength and the will and the voice of the people being heard.
Very good. Well, thank you so much for joining me on Core Principles. Congressman Jody Heiss, God bless you.
God bless you as well. Thank you for having me.
Core Principles podcast is produced in Paducah, Kentucky by Real Productions. Music is by Late July, L-E-I-G-H-T July. You can find our music on all streaming services or at latejuly.com. Thank you for joining us today for this episode of the Core Principles podcast. Please visit core.buzzsprout.com for more information, and please share with your friends. We look forward to visiting with you again on our next episode.